Hi, this is John Robinson from Someone's Story. I'm super excited to present this episode with Caroline Markle Hammond. Caroline is the founder and the head of the organization Safe in Harm's Way, which does a lot of work for people who have experienced toxicity in their relationships and are recovering from it, or as well as survivors of domestic abuse and intimate partner violence. So yeah, I'm really excited to present this episode. However, I will say that we were bringing light to certain issues, and we were talking about some difficult topics in the episode. So I do want to just give a warning ahead of time about that, that if anyone at any time feels, you know, uncomfortable or triggered, you know, obviously feel free to press pause or feel free to turn it off. But because she was very bravely vulnerable and courageously vulnerable, or as she would put it, intentionally fearless, with her story and what she talked about, and I'm really appreciative of that. And it's just a testament to her resilience that she is doing the work that she's doing and that she is telling her story the way that she's telling it. Without further ado, other than the ad that's about to play for Anchor, let me present my episode with Caroline Hammond. All right. Okay. Hello, everybody. I am here with Caroline Hammond, and she is the founder and creator of the Safe in Harm's Way Foundation. And one of the things that Caroline was bringing up is that there's really not a reason that this is kind of one of those, you know, strange situations where there's not much of a reason that we should know each other, but the fact that there is this issue that goes on in our society has brought us together. So Caroline, could you speak a little more on that if you would like to?
Sure. What Safe in Harm's Way does, and you can find Safe in Harm's Way at safeinharmsway.org. So Safe in Harm's Way is, we're like a gap service between people who need assistance with domestic violence and the actual resources they get. And so why does that work at Safe in Harm's Way? Well, we are all online. So if somebody is feeling sadness, worry, lies, fear, screaming, pain in their relationships, they might not identify as being abused.
Right.
So when in those tiny, quiet, private moments, when they wonder, well, gosh, you know, I get apologies all the time, but the behavior never changes. Or I sit in my car before I walk in the house and I'm scared of what I'm going to walk into. Or, oh my gosh, I'm at the grocery store and I promised I would be back at 5:15 and it's 5:15 right now and I'm going to get in so much trouble if I get there at 5:30. Right. Those are all hallmark red flags to what you're experiencing in a relationship, whether you're a man, whether you're a woman, whether you identify within the queer community, you're a person of color, you're disabled, men, all of it. And so what Safe in Harm's Way does is give people the vocabulary to find out what they're experiencing within their relationships, find the right resources, and do it all online in those private, quiet moments at 2 a.m. when they can't sleep and they go out to sit on the couch and they're crying once again, get the help they need. And we at Safe in Harm's Way connect everybody to all the other great people doing great work. So that's how that's a very long preface, John, to say.
I'm long-winded too, so I get
it. I was going back to it. But to say that's how you and I connected, right? There's no reason in the world. We were recording this, you know, on February 24th in the afternoon. There is zero reason in the world that you and I should know each other and be having this conversation. I'm a 53-year-old woman and you are about to be a 30-year-old man. The reason that we are having this conversation is because we chose to start speaking about the issues that are present and chose to start to solve them. And in the beauty that is the world and miracles and manifestation or God or prayer, whatever you subscribe to, now you and I are sitting down and talking about how to solve those problems. And to me, that is a tiny little miracle for the day.
Absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree. And you mentioned giving people a vocabulary. Could you elaborate on what kind of vocabulary that is and what some of that vocabulary is as well?
Sure. When I, so back in 2016, I actually escaped from an abusive relationship that was about 8 years long. I don't know if you can hear what sounds like a drag race up right outside my window, but an abusive relationship that was 8 years long. And I escaped just about 4 weeks before our planned and paid for a wedding. Now, when that happened and I left, I would have never labeled myself as being abused. And you'll hear that from many, many survivors.
Right.
In fact, the only reason that I left that relationship is I discovered his secret life. I discovered that for the entirety of our relationship, he had been having affairs with men, with women, strangers on the internet, people in the back parking lot of the community college up the street. And I also discovered that for at least on email evidence for the entirety of our relationship, he was putting my picture, my information without my knowledge and without my consent on the internet and offering me up to have sex with other people.
Wow.
I discovered there were nights I didn't remember that I had participated in, events I had gone to that I had no memory of doing. Our normal routine was to, you know, especially if I was traveling and I had a few days back at home, you know, climb in bed, be intimate, and he would bring me a glass of wine. He belonged to an organization that taught people how to drug and then rape their girlfriends or wives.
Wow.
So because there are nights I don't remember, I don't know what happened to me. And so that my escape was because I discovered this secret life. Up until then, I would not have ever labeled myself as being abused, but I could have told you that I worried he would come home and I would have folded the towels wrong and he would have screamed at me and thrown them on the floor. I could have told you that he would throw me against the wall, spit in my face, and call me a whore. I could have told you the number of times I worried when we would go out in public of how he would treat other people and embarrass me and then scream at me for something that I didn't even do. I could have told you how much I worried that he was lying to me about things.
Right.
So all of those things are the hallmark red flags of emotional abuse, verbal abuse, financial abuse, because, you know, I was often paying for things because, you know, he had to pay so much child support, he said, only to find out he had multiple hidden accounts. So telling me not to take jobs that would have made more money than he was making. Physical abuse, right? Because the physical abuse is kind of negated because there's always an apology. And oh my gosh, sweetie, I'm so sorry. I'm just stressed at work. I'm so sorry. It won't happen again. Only it won't happen again. So it's the issue is that abuse doesn't start out as abuse. It starts out as love.
Right.
And then it morphs over time. And so to give people vocabulary, we want to talk about the stories of survivors. And so that's the one of the hallmark foundations of Safe in Harm's Way, safeinharmsway.org, is people can share their stories, either anonymously, you know, or as themselves. And we tell the story and we say, hey, if you are experiencing this, this is actually emotional abuse. And here's all the resources you need for emotional abuse. So we can take the situation that says someone screams at you in public and degrades you in front of a restaurant, but doesn't ever lay a hand on you. And that makes you feel sad. That makes you worry. That makes you live in fear. That's emotional abuse.
Right.
If someone hits you, even if they apologize, even if they promise never to do it again, and yet they do, that's physical abuse.
Right.
If someone has affairs on you and you do not know that you don't you know, you think you're in a monogamous relationship and the other person is sleeping with anything that says yes and raises their hand from the internet, that's actually physical abuse and sexual coercion. Because you are participating authentically and honestly in a relationship that you think is monogamous. And meanwhile, that person is anything but monogamous. Those are all different forms of abuse. So giving that vocabulary via storytelling is how we then allow people to identify what that is happening in their lives. And then we have 20 different content creators at Safe in Harm's Way who put out content that help people heal from that. And then we have a great amount of partners that come in and give all kinds of healing modalities. So people can also do that online and heal, whether they're just discovering those vocabulary, whether they have figured out that this is what they're living, whether they want to leave but can't leave, or they have left and they are still healing. So any place anyone is on the continuum is where Safe in Harm's Way provides the vocabulary, the associated services, and the modalities to heal.
Wow. That's well, first, I just want to say thank you so much for being vulnerable with your story. And it's just a testament to your resilience that you're sitting here right now doing this work. And I also want to say just, and we had talked about this aspect in a previous conversation, the idea that it's not so much about the threshold should not be, am I being abused? The threshold should be, how am I feeling? Because once the threshold becomes, am I being abused? And you so beautifully illustrated this and what you just said, it's like, well, what is abuse? Is abuse getting hit? Is abuse, you know, is it physical? Is it being cheated on? I've tried with clients to really, you know, make sure that this is, you know, so importantly portrayed to them, is this idea, if you don't feel good about a relationship that you're in, you don't have to stay. I mean, it doesn't mean that we just leave at the first sign of trouble. That's different. But if you're putting in effort at your own expense to the point where you're martyring yourself, then that's unhealthy and you don't have to do that. And I think that's such an important point that you're making when you say that, because I think it really does give people an important emotional benchmark. And I'm an emotional intelligence coach. And I think that giving people that kind of emotional awareness and making it about that is such an amazing lens and framework for people to work through, rather than this more, and I say legalistic with the kind of a small L, not necessarily in terms of legal courts, but more like just this very rigid definition of what abuse is. I think that's so important. So that's incredible. You mentioned that you have a lot of social media content creators. Could you talk a little bit more about the Smart Warriors program that you have?
Sure. So in fact, if anyone wants to join the Smart Warrior program, they can reach out to me at info@safeinharmsway.org. Now, our Smart Warrior program is a group, currently we're at 200 of influencers is what we call them, that turn around and share the content from Safe in Harm's Way on their own social media. And we do that because we know that the way that folks find us is our online campaigns that we do. A lot of reach out, working within the community, working across the country, doing training. But we also find it because, hey, I found Safe in Harm's Way because my sister shared it on her page.
Right.
I found Safe in Harm's Way because the person I rent a house from gave it to me. Mm-hmm. I found Safe. So when we know that when we share the content, much like influencers can drive brands now, right? I mean, you buy sunglasses because they look great on somebody on Instagram, right? What if, and this is where the beauty of it pays off, someone finds the help they need because it was shared by you on your own social media. And it also gives, as a smart warrior, it gives people, one of the questions I field most often is, how do I help my friend? I mean, I am so fearful of my friend. How do I help her? It's a benign way to say, hey, maybe you should check this out. I mean, what we're doing right now, John, is really cool because the amount of people we've been able to help at Safe in Harm's Way because they heard one of the podcasts I've done and a friend sent it to him with zero expectations. But, you know, this chick was really cool on this podcast I heard.
Right.
And then it's an easy way. What that does is gives friends and family the ability to benignly share something with someone they love and do so that person in their own time, in their own moment, can choose to read or listen. But most importantly, it's never done with, I think the person you're with is horrible. Because when that happens, the person living with abuse starts to defend the relationship.
Exactly.
And they hear nothing else after it.
Right.
Nothing else after it. So this way, when you are a smart warrior, we give you, you know, every hashtag you would want to use. We tell you how to frame it, because some people say, well, gosh, if I share it, people are going to think I have, you know, I'm in an abusive relationship. You know, we have, I share because I care as a hashtag. We have, for whomever needs this, or because you never know, or violence, you know, against relationship violence is an epidemic. Let's stop the epidemic. We give all that information so people can share it, and then also do it with the understanding of I'm putting this out in the world to help whomever needs it.
Right. Well, and the other thing that's important about that is whether it's a podcast, or whether it's, you know, influencers, or whether it's sharing social media posts, is that it's the idea that, you know, when someone sees these things, it's like, oh, maybe I'm not crazy. Maybe I'm not alone. Yes. Maybe I'm not, you know, like that. Like, and when I've shared things like this with, or even some, when I've shared things like this with some of the people that I've coached, it's, or even some people back when I had my old job when I was a case manager, you know, that I would, when I would share some of these things with them, they'd be like, oh my goodness, maybe I'm not completely off base here. Maybe I'm not completely losing my mind. Some of the things you described that happened to you sound like something that are out of a movie script. And that's why it's hard for a lot of people to believe. And even just as importantly, perhaps, is it makes people who haven't experienced these things, or who aren't going through these things, it makes it like, well, maybe I should listen to what these people are saying. Because I'll be the first to admit, and I think a lot of people have a hard time admitting this who are in the field, is essentially that for a couple of years, I was very ignorant about this issue. I was very dismissive of it. When people would come to me and say, hey, you know, my abuser's bugging my car, I'd be like, delusion, you know, like, right?
Right. Yeah.
Like, it wasn't until I dug a little deeper and saw certain patterns, but like, because it's like, how many people can have the same delusion, you know?
Exactly.
Like, after a while, it's like, well, that's a little strange that I've seen this many people and they've all described the exact same thing. Maybe there's something else going on here, you know? And then I met a bunch of survivors who had come out on the other side of this, and they were like, oh yeah, that's normal. Like, well, not normal, but like, normal for this situation.
Exactly. You know, like, normal for this situation.
So if you want, I think that's an amazing thing what you're doing when it comes to just not normalizing the behavior, but normalizing the fact that this does happen. Mm-hmm. You know, this exists. I think that's so important.
You're stating it perfectly. You know, people, just one person, I was having a conversation with the mom of someone who lost her daughter due to domestic violence, and having a conversation, and she said, if just one person had believed me, my daughter would be alive. Just one. So for anybody who's living with abuse and talking about it, you need just one person to believe. For me, part of this process is I did not know at the time that, you know, it's difficult, right? I mean, I'm 6 years out. I'm 6 years out, but you know, I'll be very transparent. Less than a half hour ago, I sent you a message, right? That I said, John, it's a hard day. I've heard a lot of heavy things today. It's a hard day. So healing is beautiful, and that you get to be alive and you get to keep healing. Healing, my daughter coined this phrase, it can be both. Healing is also really hard because sometimes things happen that put you back. So talking about those things is vital. And you said it clearly. It allows people to think, maybe I'm not crazy, because the abuser has crafted this story from the very beginning. Oh, sweet pea, you're the only one who can love me.
Right.
I've been traumatized my whole life. My parents didn't love me. My sister did things to me. You're the only person that loves me. And what I often say to people who have navigated this is the fierce intelligence, the empathy, the dedication to other humans, the way you invest in order to never give up are the exact things that put you in harm's way of a yes. person who gave you a sob story and mm-hmm. you believed it and stuck around and kept sticking around to keep trying right. to fix it while you were slowly dismantled from the inside out. Intentionally, that story you're created about woe is me and life is so horrible is intentionally done to hook you in and make you stay. Exactly. And then it's twisted against you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, really? So, I mean, I remember when I first started to discover some things about the person I escaped from, and it was said to me, I knew you'd be really pissed about this. I mean, I knew that once you found out I was putting your picture out, you'd be really mad. It's just like you. It's just like you, Carolyn, to get mad like this. And I thought, yeah, it is, because it's egregious that you said this, but you've right. been dismantled so much that you start to think you're crazy because you've been told you're crazy. Mm-hmm. And when you hear someone else say it, you're like, well, wait a minute, I'm not. Mm-hmm. And so I want to put a raise my hand here and say, if any of these things we're talking about are triggering to you,
sure.
You know, there are resources online that you can call. You can call the domestic shelters. You can call the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. You can call RAIN, which is, you know, for survivors of rape, incest, there's many resources out there that you can tap into. They're all available if you want to look at safeinharmsway.org. And specifically, the type of abuse I faced unknowingly, and that's where Safe in Harm's Way came from, right? I mean, I was always in harm's way in that relationship,
mm-hmm.
and I never knew it.
Right,
never knew right. it. Just as other survivors are always in harm's way, and they don't have the right vocabulary. So how do right. you find safety in that? And that part of it, if you go to domesticshelters.org, they did a great webinar, and it's on their website about this particular type of abuse, where abusers go out of their way to drug and then sexually assault the person in their life. Mm-hmm. So it's the thing that people don't talk about because there's so much shame of, oh my God, how did you not know? Well,
oh, so this is like a phenomenon.
Oh, this is like, I'm not alone. It's very, very common.
Oh, wow.
It's very, very common. Now, would I have ever thought something's wrong with me? I would have, like, there were times when there was physically something wrong with me, but I thought, I don't know. It's another yeast infection. It's an, you know, this is girl stuff mm-hmm. I'm talking about, but you know, that wasn't it. I know mm-hmm. that now that wasn't it. I would have never thought, oh, I bet he's drugging me. Oh, I bet I never would have thought that. Right. And if our normal routine,
how would you know?
Right. If our normal routine was to hop into bed, be intimate together, and I wake up in the morning knowing and feeling as if I had mm-hmm. sex, well, you know, I had sex with him. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened after the wine. I don't know what happened on those nights
right.
that we went places, and I have zero memory of going there. I don't mm-hmm. know what happened then. Again, that is a discovery I had
mm-hmm.
because I found it on his computer.
Right.
Most people don't get the beauty of that discovery, and I'll call it beautiful, even mm-hmm. in its most sick, depraved, furious ways.
Mm-hmm.
But most people don't get that luxury, and it happens all the time.
What would ever make you imagine that was happening? Like
exactly,
who would even think that would be happening?
Exactly. Well, and John, think about this. Like, if you were my therapist and I came to you and I said, I don't know why, but I kind of think he might be drugging me and raping me, you would have been like, you're crazy. If I had gone to my friends and said that,
right.
there's never a world where I would have thought that ever.
Right.
And even if I had, or anyone else had, it's so egregious that people would have think, oh, you're having nightmares. Right. Something's, you know, it wouldn't have been ever believed and
right.
easily dismissed, right? So yeah. it's a part that people don't talk about once they find out, because it is so sad. Mm-hmm. And it is so feeling alone And, you know, here's me raising my hand saying, you're not alone.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you're doing that. Speaking of the fact that you're being so outspoken about this and so honest and so vulnerable, you know, I know that that you also have a radio show and a podcast that you're working on. Could you talk a little more about that?
Sure. So every month on the third Saturday of every month on KKFI, which is a Kansas City-based radio 90.1, but you can listen to it directly from kkfi.org. You can listen any place in the world to it. Has a reach of about, you know, 50,000 people, depending on what's going on in the Kansas City area that day. But 50,000 people turn That's in pretty for up, this yeah. little radio show. And you can also download TuneIn, which is an app you can use on your iPhone, any phone, and listen to any radio station across the world. So you can find it, and it's called Every Woman on the third Saturday of every month. And then my particular segment of Every Woman is titled Intentionally Fearless. Now, Intentionally Fearless is also the name of my podcast. And that comes from, you have to be, as a survivor or as anyone who's lived through some kind of horrific trauma, you can either choose to be very small and quiet and live in fear. And that's an easy choice. And that's, I'm not negating anybody's choice for that. Or you can choose to, knowing what I know about myself and the situation I lived through, I am still scared, but I am going to intentionally be fearless. That means in tiny little small steps. You know, you can call it vulnerability, you can call it courage. Both of those to me ring more of an acute situation, like an immediate thing, like a truck is coming at me. I'm going to have a courage enough to push a child out of the way and run myself, right? Intentionally fearless means every time you have a choice in your life, in the big and small moments of 24 hours of your day, you choose to take action versus climbing in bed and going to take a nap or drinking a bottle of wine or having three plates of nachos. You know, anytime you have an opportunity to intentionally be fearless and step forward into more healing, that's an everyday, every moment kind of mentality. And when most people who have navigated abuse have to also navigate it knowing that they're the person who abused them lives is still alive in any place where they live.
Right.
And you have to be intentionally fearless in how you approach life. And so Intentionally Fearless is the name of my, both my podcast and the radio show.
Yeah. I think that's an excellent name. And it's like a grief that is hard to resolve because it's, you know, like the person's still walking around. And I think that's an excellent attitude to have. I have the same attitude towards my mental illness. I can either choose to, I think the only reason I'm still on this planet is because I choose to, you know, keep marching forward instead of lying down.
And I'm not negating a good nap. I'm not negating, like, if you have reached your point and your energy is so, go take a nap to renew your energy. Go meditate, go pray, go do whatever you need to do. That's also part of being intentionally fearless, right? Is to know and recognize in your body what it needs and then take the appropriate action to fuel yourself is a beautiful form of being intentionally fearless.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also recently were featured in Times Square. So first of all, congratulations on that. Could you talk a little bit more about how that came about?
Sure. That is, I mean, it's a tiny little miracle. You know, it is the choice. It stems from the choice to start to speak about what happened to me. And it was done with the one of the three founding pillars of Safe in Harm's Way, which is confidence, patience, and the truth. So I decided to start speaking with confidence, even if my voice shakes. I would always speak the truth. And I would be patient where I chose to speak. Because first of all, not everybody deserves to hear my story until I'm ready to tell everybody my story. And patience means I would really love to rail against the person's family and call out their family. And I would love to patience says they don't matter enough to me to call out. It means the person I escaped from doesn't matter enough to me to call out. That person is inconsequential to my life in every way. So patient says, I don't have to do that. They're not there. So in deciding to tell my story, I had a friend who owned billboards, and I would never have known it, right? Which is also a testament to use confidence, patient, the truth, speak it. People are listening. People are watching what you do. This gentleman called and said at the start of the pandemic, said, Carolyn, I have 8 billboards in the St. Louis area. What could Safe in Harm's Way do with them? I said, Vince Miller, I have zero idea, but give them to me and let's find out. So we put billboards across St. Louis area. I'm a St. Louis girl. Been in Kansas City just about 11 years. Now that seems old school. Billboards and out-of-home advertising seems old school. But during the pandemic, people were walking more. People were traveling more by car. And the beauty of it is when abusers use isolation, cutting some off from their friends, from resources, from their family, the one thing an abuser cannot control is what someone sees when they're driving, what someone sees when they're sitting in an urgent care, what someone sees when they're walking down the Las Vegas Strip. And so our services at Safe in Harm's Way increased over 300%, 312%.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, the access to our services during once the pandemic started. So then Vince said, let's go to Kansas City. So he got the gentleman from Kansas City who works with Lamar Advertising. And Bob gave me 2 billboards in Kansas City, and we increased another 112%. And then Vince said, Carolyn, how about I connect you to the CEO of the Out of Home Advertising Association of America, which is the overarching industry standard business that every tiny little out of home advertising, and most of these people are decades, family owned for decades, organizations that have billboards out of the house across America. Talk to the CEO there, Stephen.
And I didn't know there was a thing. I didn't know that was even a thing.
Yep, it's a thing. So Stephen Freitas was the CEO. He's retired now, will always remain one of my favorite all-time humans, and pitched him on it. And Vince even said, hey, like he might agree to putting something about domestic violence on billboards, but I don't think he's going to sign off on Safe in Harm's Way. He might not sign off on your colors or anything. I said, I don't care, Vince, if we just start a conversation about domestic violence based on this data alone, I win. Turns out the end of the conversation, Stephen said, well, yeah, we'll want to partner with Safe in Harm's Way. We'll want you to use all your logos and your colors. And yeah,
there we go.
So when we did that first iteration, we had an exclusive in Forbes. We had, podcast after podcast, an interview from NPR and PBS and amazing, all this great publicity around it. And in some areas, 833% increase in the utilization of the services at Safe in Harm's Way. So
832%. That's incredible.
Yeah. So that was big, right? And so we had tested it enough. I've spent almost 30 years in pharmaceutical sales, so I'm a data geek. And so I thought, well, if the OAAA is going to let us keep doing it, who do I want to hold hands with to change the world? That's always been our mantra. And I love the folks at domesticshelters.org. Domesticshelters.org, the beauty of them is you plug in your zip code, and in your area, every resource has been vetted and tested that, yes, it's legitimate. Everybody serves domestic violence in this zip code. Here's where you get help. And the beauty is you do not have to live at a shelter in order to access their free counseling, in order to access their legal services, in order to get help with going to court for a restraining order. You don't have to live there. So you have instant on the ground. Hey, who are the lawyers that advocate best for people navigating, high conflict divorce, which is just another term for domestic violence, is included in that divorce. And how do you reach them in your zip code? So I approached them, and Ashley Rumschlag is the CEO and president of domesticshelters.org. And she said, yeah, we'll partner with you. Now, keep in mind, like they are a massive organization that's been around since 2013. Here we are, a little Safe in Harm's Way, chugging our way along, right? And Ashley says, we've got this Madison, they're in Times Square on Broadway. advertising agency that's wanted to work with us, maybe they'd want to build this campaign. So Safe in Harm's Way brought the OAAA. Uh-huh. DomesticShelters.org brought an advertising agency. Everybody working pro bono for the sole purpose
of
driving awareness and built a campaign. And I said to them, when we build this, I'm going to ask Stephen to get us in Times Square. That's going to be my close. Mm. And it was this beautiful evolution. And in fact, I got a screen grab of it when it happened. I had been traveling.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, on Instagram,
I had been traveling in Italy. So it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, my time. And,
right.
You know, Neon was in New York and Stephen, I think, is in the Carolinas. And we're all on this call. And Neon says, hey, are there dimensions of the billboard we need to be aware of to like pivot on quickly, you know, mm-hmm. because we've got everything built out. But, you know, could there be one-offs? And Stephen said, oh, gosh, yeah, everything in Times Square. And so I said, Stephen, you're about to get the biggest close that I've ever asked for in my entire career. Who do you know in Times Square to get our billboards there? And will you call them and secure it? And he paused and then he said, yeah, I know exactly who to call and I'll get it done. And he did. So that means that, and this campaign is called thelastimsorry.com. The lastimsorry.com. And it's designed for men. It's designed for women. It's designed for immigrants. It's designed for people of color. It's designed for folks in the LGBTQIA+ community. It's designed mm-hmm. for people who are disabled. If you are experiencing, again, the feelings associated right. in your journey of relationships, you go through, identify male or female, identify how you are in every other facet of your life, answer a couple of questions, and you get the immediate solution for what you're experiencing right now. And that allows you, anybody, to seek the resources. It allows friends and family to say, you know, mm-hmm. you should check out this, thelastimsorry.com. And it's built mm-hmm. around a set of fading flowers and all the stages of decay of flowers.
That's great.
That represent all the times that you were told, I'm sorry, and the behavior never changed.
Right. And that's such a great name, too, for many reasons. Because one, for the reason you mentioned, the last I'm sorry, because it's like, how many sorries are there going to be? Another right. reason is because it's kind of cryptic a little
yes.
bit. By itself, you know, if you don't know that it's associated with this mission, it's kind of cryptic. Like, if you just put it on a piece of paper, it's like, what the heck is the yes. lastimsorry.com?
Right.
like if someone just came across that, especially an abuser, they might not know what that is.
Bingo. And that's why it was designed that way. And the website itself is completely agnostic. You don't see anybody, so anybody who goes on it is not going to see a visual of which they don't identify. Right. So they're not going to see like a white woman. They're not going to see a black person. They're not going to see, you know, a man. It's not identifiable. And if someone is looking over your shoulder, it just looks like you're taking an online quiz. It doesn't look anything like you're seeking help or resources. And so it's a beautiful way on so many fronts for people to very safely get the help they need. They also can exit out of it quickly. If you use our emergency exit button, not only it shuts down the site, but it shuts down that browser for 2 days. So you can't go to bed and your abuser think, what was that? What were they looking at? And find it in your history. If you shut out on just a regular quick exit, it just shuts it down and takes you to Google. So you have options in how you want to choose your safety even. And
absolutely.
Yeah, it's just a beautiful thing. And I have to give a shout out, to the team at Neon, which are all the art supervisors and directors. You know, we have Morgan and Sam and Lesha, who all worked mm-hmm. on this, and Jesse, who, you know, led, that's his division of Neon, is an IPG mm-hmm. health company, all done pro bono.
That's incredible. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, the lastimsorry.com is the first campaign. There'll be a new iteration of it every quarter. And, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't say, you know, the folks at Clear Channel Outdoors, the folks at Big Outdoor and the folks at Big Media who control the NASDAQ board all generously donated their premium Times Square collateral for a month with 1 billion impressions and opportunity for people to find help. That's
amazing.
It's amazing.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. So one thing that brings up that we haven't touched on that I would like to touch on a little bit briefly is the phenomenon of cyber stalking, because or at least cyber monitoring, because that is something that is what actually kind of led me to go deeper into this work.
How so? Can you tell me that backstory?
Yeah, sure. So the fact that, I mean, I've had a lot of contact with this issue over the years in my social work career. And when I was, even when I was still in college, I had an internship where I actually worked with perpetrators of domestic abuse pretty often, you know, at a probation and parole office. And then in my, in an internship and in the case management job at a community mental health center, both in a group therapy program and, as I said, in a case management job, while it wasn't the main focus I did, because a variety of cases came through my door, it was something I frequently encountered. And, you know, one of the things that would often come across my desk, a lot of the, you know, domestic abuse clients that I would have would make these claims about being monitored through cyber technology. And for the first, I worked in that position for 4 years. And for the first couple of years I worked there, as I said, I was kind of dismissive of it because, I mean, I was understanding about it, but people with much greater degrees and who had had a lot more education than I did, kind of oftentimes would say it was part of their delusional diagnoses. So I kind of just deferred to that. But as when the pandemic happened, more and more and more and more of these types of cases started coming across my desk, because this is kind of one of the pandemics within the pandemic.
Exactly.
And I started getting more and more claims of, you know, these victims and survivors of this issue being monitored through cyber technology. And, you know, all of them would describe very similar things and similar methods. And I just, it was like, well, how many, as I said earlier, how many people can have the same delusion?
Exactly. You know?
And then I started digging deeper into it. And I don't mean like just reading articles. I mean, like, I would look up the website that they said that their abuser had on them, and I'd find it, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I'd be like, oh my goodness, you know, I can't believe that I was this, that all it would have taken was me just looking this up. And then I would start going with them to the police, because sometimes, and what I would start doing, because I mean, the way gaslighting works, as we both know, and as you probably know better than I do, is that the intention is to distort reality. So yes. It's to make it so you don't know. So, because sometimes I wouldn't know what, even if there was a shred of truth to their claims, sometimes they would have it so a lot of their claims maybe were paranoia. So it was hard to sift through their claims to know what was paranoia and what was truth. So what I would do is kind of like these really elaborate reality tests, where sometimes if it was like, I think that my stuff is being monitored or interfered with through my taxes at the IRS, I'd take them to the IRS office and try to figure out, you know, okay, is there something going on here? This is what's, you know, and I'd leave it up to them to describe I leave it at their discretion to describe how much of their situation they wanted to tell the IRS agent. And then I would, because they'd be very flustered, and I'd try to sift through it for the IRS agent and advocate for them to some extent. And then basically, you know, if the IRS agent didn't find anything, I'd kind of tell them, okay, it doesn't look like there's anything nefarious going on here. It just looks like, you know, maybe during the pandemic, they're a little backlogged, you know. But if there was something that was, if someone came up, you know, if I found like a website or something that they claim their abuser had on them, I'd be like, oh, wow, this does look strange. Or like, oh, maybe this is how they fished you. I can't say for certain, but maybe this is how they fished you. So I had to do these kind of elaborate reality tests with them and sift through these things. But the phenomenon of cyber stalking has you know, drastically increased based on, I don't have stats on it, but based on my observation and the work that I've done. And it's one of the most difficult issues because it drives people mad. It sometimes leads people to use substances, and then that leads to even more paranoia.
Yes.
So I don't know if you could just touch on that a little bit, that would be great.
Yeah. You know, that's it. So let me take you back on a little bit of a history. Remember when people started having their identity stolen? You know, right. And all these services started to come up because all of a sudden somebody's opened a checking account in your name and your information. And it turns out they were a credit card. And right. All of these services started coming up to monitor that kind of theft of identity. It's like that on steroids for people navigating abuse. It's like that on steroids for people, I'll point this out to you, John, who assist in the mental health community. Because people can find where you live, what make of your car you have, trace your phone number to every account you have, and then begin to harass you with that information. Right. Not just you, your friends. Not just your friends and you, your family. Not just your friends, you and your family, but your friends' friends and your friends' family. Because all of that information is several clicks away on any number of sites and easy to find. So Safe in Harm's Way just has now a partnership with an organization called DeleteMe.com.
So let you can me go write to that down.
Yep.
I'll write it down at the end. But
And I'll add the links for the show.
Please
because
do.
You can use DeleteMe.com and you can use our promotion code. We're a premium partner with them, SAFE20, and you get discounts off their programs. DeleteMe.com will scrub all of your data from the internet. And then you get a dedicated person who every quarter goes back and scrubs your data from the internet. Because what happens is data brokers sell and then they get shut down and then they pop up again and they sell your data and then they get shut down and they pop up again. So you can erase it once and it's going to come back in 3 months.
Yep. Because it's for sale.
Exactly. So DeleteMe.com with your own personal advisor goes in quarterly. They send you a report. They say, hey, here is the 75 data brokers we've removed your information from. Here's how long it took us to do it. Here's the ones that are still pending. Here's the amount of time we saved you. And then the next quarter you say, okay, this is what we did this quarter. This is where we removed you from. You get to put every bit of information. So it removes your children, removes your family, removes where you've worked from. Because abusers also will find out where you work and show up there. And I'm using now like mental health professionals, right? I'm using now lawyers who decide to help people who have been going through domestic violence. The abuser doesn't like that. The abuser can find out where the lawyer lives. The abuser can find out where the lawyer's family lives, children. The abuser can find out where the lawyer's friends live and harass all of them. So DeleteMe goes in, takes care of all that, and the SAFE 20 discount allows people to take advantage of our premium status and get a discount on their services because we know it's the way every 3 months, right? We talked that. You want to know what statistic comes back to every 3 months for people who've navigated abuse?
What's that?
People are most often to be killed at a 75% increase in the first 3 months.
Wow.
Of leaving an abuser. So the abuser doesn't know where you're at. 3 months go by. All of a sudden, you start getting shoeboxes in the mail with headless Barbies. You start getting people poking around where you live. People start poking around your new job. So you did all the hard work of escaping. And within 3 months, they can look you up on the internet and find you.
Yeah.
I think there's a correlation to that. There's an, you know, I can't say, oh, definitely there's a correlation, but I can say the statistics is 3 months.
Of course. Right.
The data brokers come out within 3 months.
Right. And the other thing that I've I have some safeguards in place for that. I won't share what they are on air because. But it's scary because I've had some times where I've wondered, like, am I being breached? I've had to wonder those things. I've had to think about those things, you know? And it's very, it's very nerve-wracking. And the other thing is, sometimes when I talk about it, it feels like I'm talking in circles. There's another organization out there called Operation Safe Escape that, when you describe Delete Me, it sounds similar. And I can send you, are you, I don't know if you're familiar with Operation Safe
Escape. I'm not.
But I'll send you their information when we get off air. The other thing is that, this is pure speculation, but I would like to see authorities look into whether or not there's a black market for this type of stuff, whether there's a black market industry for this.
There has to be. I mean, my theory would be, yes, there's a black market for everything. So, you know, there's a way that people can work to find it. So it's really scrubbing that data very often, which is so important to try to remove it from places that exist, and then at least negate some of the risk and the fear, and allow you to be intentionally fearless. So it's part of the equation, and that really, my kids call it connecting the dots. No one connects the dots, right? No one says, okay, what this means are these things. You know, what it means when I escape is I have to stay in hiding from the person I'm escaping from. What it means is, if someone asks strangers to come to your house to have sex, that they've been in your home and seen all the pictures of your children, and they know where they live. You live now. And any jealous partner who finds out knows where you live now.
Right.
What it means is, you work.
Yeah. And what it means is, if you invite that abuser back into your life, and they're the person you're suspecting of monitoring you and targeting you, then they, especially if you've moved, then you've compromised your home,
everything.
You've compromised your devices, you've compromised. So you have to resweep everything, you know.
Yep.
A lot of people in these situations don't want to hear that, because a lot of times if they're in a tough situation, their abusers put them in these tough situations so they can come in to save the day and be Mr. Hero or Mrs. Yes. Hero, you know. And that's part of the plan, but you know, once they do that, it's like, well, I needed money. Well, yeah, that was part of the plan, you know.
Right. You were set up for that. Yeah. Yeah. Intentionally. I mean, that's part of the equation of how abusers worm their way back into people's lives, you know?
Right.
And that's a big part of it. And so it's really important for people to remember, you know, once you've learned the vocabulary, you have all those skills that you inherently are what attracted the abuser to you, to pull you out and keep you out of that situation, because life sure is better in the after when you do the hard work to escape and stay gone, and realize that the person who's been issuing the abuse the entire time, you know, there should be no more last I'm sorry.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it should just be gone.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, well, this has been great, Caroline. Any final thoughts that you want to share?
Yeah, you know, I appreciate our time together, John, and I appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much. You know, at Safe in Harm's Way, we are launching a campaign in March for Women's History Month. And we are actually on March 8th at 10 a.m. Central Time. We are going to talk about the women who never got to make history because of losing their lives to domestic violence. It's a program that we are going to keep highlighting every month. So if we have created all the social media you need, we talked about the smart warriors, right? And we're going to do smart warriors on steroids. You will get everything you need to write as a social media post. You will get every hashtag. You will get every visual. And all we ask is to flood Instagram at 10 a.m. on March 8th. So if anyone is interested in that, and they hear this before March 8th, then just reach out to the same info@safeinharmsway.org. If you're listening to this after and it's March 8th, then just follow us on Instagram with that. And we're always going to be profiling new families, because the stories of the lives lost are told by the families themselves. And we're going to be profiling people. And if you have a story to tell, then make sure reaching out to info@safeinharmsway.org allows you to tell your story and us to share your family that you lost forever only highlighting the person who they were, not the abuse that they experienced.
Great. Fantastic. And then just before we go, you've already highlighted a lot of links, but are there any other links or places that you want to highlight, or anywhere that people can find you that you want to make sure that we put in the show notes, or just
We go? Thank you. It's if you look on Caroline Markle, M-A-R-K-E-L Hammond. So CarolineMarkleHammond.com. I have news. I have resources. I have things you can share with family and friends. We have our partners where there's lots of discounts. So anything that we provide service-wise to Safe in Harm's Way, you can sign up for the newsletter and you can sign up for our additional trainings. We have coming up, hopefully by the end of the year, a girlfriend training or family training where people who need to talk to their loved one about what abuse they kind of suspect is happening is done in a way that's neutral and actually gets somebody services. So we've got all kinds of training coming up, and being on the advanced preview list of the newsletter, signing up at CarolineMarkleHammond.com is the easiest way to get that information.
Awesome. All right. Thank you so much, Caroline. And this has been great.
Thank you, John. I appreciate our connection and your time you invested with me. Thank you.
Likewise. Thank you so much for listening. It was an honor and a pleasure to have Caroline on. I will have a lot more information about Caroline's initiatives and stuff in the show notes. When this initially releases, I might have to update some of the show notes just to put all that information in there. But check out Caroline's Instagram and social media. Check out Safe in Harm's Way. Check out the Uninterrupted Stories Initiative. And also, check out all the stuff she's doing for Women's Month this month. And, although her organization helps people from all backgrounds and all genders and everything. So, just give her a look. And I will also put some resources for domestic abuse and toxic relationships in the show notes as well. Thank you all for listening. It's truly... I just want to say this. My 30th birthday is tomorrow, and on the 15th of March, because I don't know when you'll be listening to this. It's incredible to think, and she and I recorded that episode back in the end of February, and it's incredible to think that just I've made so many connections and reached so many people in these short 3 decades of my life. And I've just been doing a lot of reflection lately, and I'm just really grateful for that. So, yeah, thank you all for continuing to listen. We just passed 900 streams, that's exciting. Just keep listening, and I'll have more content for you for the rest of Season 5, which will probably come to a close around mid-April is when I'm targeting. So, thank you guys.